evening, Jennifer.
Good evening, Ed.
Good evening, Josh.
Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh and Ed. We are back to discuss a new episode of Glee. Applause, everyone.
Yay!
We got a new episode entitled The Night of Neglect, where the Glee-ers perform songs by neglected artists, which we will discuss a little bit of our own, our favorite neglected artists, a little bit later. And we asked people on Twitter and on Facebook the same question. We opened up here with a bit of Tina performing. Tina performing I Follow Rivers by Lika Lee. It was funny. There's four songs from this episode, and they're all pretty quiet. There wasn't really a lot of... it was hard to find a song that was an upbeat opening number. They're all kind of slow ones from this episode. Night of Neglect, it's the first episode in quite a while. Ed, how did you feel about the episode this week?
I've heard a lot of like, not positive things about this episode. mainly lack of plot. But I say that... It's not so much that it's maybe there was a lack of plot, but we got to play with some characters that we've been played with in a while. So for me, I feel like the episode was successful. Not every episode is going to be sectional or regionals or nationals. and this episode, I think, was okay for it not being one of those.
You make a good point that we got to see some of the characters. We got to see a song from Tina. We got to get a song from Mercedes. That was awfully nice. Jennifer, how did you feel about The Night of Neglect?
I wasn't crazy about it, but there were some parts of it that really bugged me, but there were some parts of it that I actually enjoyed more than average of late. So in some ways it was just, it was more...
That it's an episode?
Well, it's like, you know, it was a night of extremes for me. Like, there were some characters and some plot lines that I hated, and there were other characters and plot lines that I thought were absolutely fantastic. I just got kind of frustrated, though, because I kind of feel like, you know, I'm like, just stop skipping shows. Actually do shows, and that way you don't have to, like, jam in so much stuff and have really kind of lazy and unrealistic resolutions to things. Like, I felt like a few things were kind of dismissed or resolved way too easily. So,
well, we continue to have the problem. We continue to have the problem of absolutely no narrative momentum. This season has been
despite the rumors that there's going to be a break. I just confirmed on Wikipedia that there is no break from now to the end of the season.
Well, that's exciting.
That's awesome.
That's going to be and that's what the show needs. I mean, because you're right. When they have these breaks, then when they come back, it needs to be big scene. You know,
it's very frenetic,
game-changing episodes. It's like whenever they go away and then we come back with something like this episode, honestly, if it had been one in a like 6 or 7 week sprawl, like kind of like you said, Ed, they don't all have to be great game changing episodes. And if this was just one in a sprawl of 6 or 7 episodes, I would have been like, yeah, that's cool. Not a whole heck of a lot happened. The songs were kind of dreamy or, you know, kind of sleepy. And, you know, I had a lot of problems with the plot. But because we've had this long break and then this is the first episode back, this is the episode coming back being like, remember why you love this show? And I'm like, not because of anything in here.
There were some quirky moments.
You're right, and Jennifer makes a good point. There were some extremes. The League of Doom I thought was amazing.
I loved
the League of Doom. I loved Dustin Goolsbee. Like, where's he been?
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Having Terry back even for like 4 lines was awesome.
Yeah.
Sandy was freaking great.
Sandy was great.
Sandy totally stole the show.
And Sunshine Corazon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And some great Britney moments. It was like people were like, we haven't got any Tina and Mercedes moments. So they're like, well, we don't really want to develop their characters at all, but we do want them to have some time in the sun. So we'll just have a boring episode surrounding them.
Yeah, I felt like it just didn't do them justice. You know,
I feel like the writers were too afraid to actually do anything. Like, the writers are just so comfortable with where Tina and Mercedes are. Mm. They have no desire to push them any farther. They're like, well, we need to make an episode about them, but we can't really have anything happen.
Tina was the punching bag.
Yeah.
Tina's only role in this entire episode was to be the punching bag for the entire Glee team. I'm like, I'm sorry. Put Rachel up there and have her be booed. I felt like it was really... I think it was such a disservice to her. I mean, Mercedes, you know, I was really frustrated with her character and Lauren's manipulation throughout. But at the end, I loved it. You know, I mean, like, I understood the intent. I just didn't appreciate the method. And, yeah, to see her performance was kind of worth it. But I just felt bad for Tina. Like,
yeah, you're right. I mean, she got a great disservice to finally get some screen time and then to get it like this. Once again, like you said before we started, Ed, I don't think we've had a full Tina solo. Like, she keeps getting interrupted when she started sobbing.
Her last solo was True Colors back in season one.
There you go.
Well, she did the one with Artie, and then she was dancing. With,
she didn't sing.
Oh, that's right. She wasn't singing. She was just dancing with Mike Chang.
And then she tried to do a song for Mike Chang, and she started sobbing in the middle. Yep. And then when she had Somewhere.
Can't complete a song.
Oh,
poor Tina.
They did the duets, but it was, yeah.
Yeah. And then Tonight in the first season where her voice cracks. She's the one who, like, doesn't get to finish the song, apparently, except for True Colors.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really frustrated me that, you know, this is supposed to be about neglected artists, but yet, Holly Holiday yet has another full-length song.
Well, and Ed, you said you make a really good point, too, where it did kind of feel like the writers were saying, okay, you guys keep bugging us for a Mercedes Tina episode, so we're going to give it to you, but we don't want to commit to a full episode arc. We don't want to start anything.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like, we don't want to move them at all, so we're just going to do nothing.
Yeah, we're just going to kind of fold them into the rest of the show, or we're going to fold them into this one episode, and we're going to give them just enough so that we can walk away and be like, see, Tina and Mercedes aren't totally neglected.
Exactly.
It did feel a little fake. And really, what we got for Mercedes in this episode was not all that significant. I mean, we got a killer solo that we'll listen to later. I mean, and I guess in that, it's a victory. But we really didn't get any character development from her. And we got some oddly false moments, I thought, like that scene in the car with Rachel that... It just felt kind of false to Mercedes' character. Like, I know that Mercedes, you know, talks a big game.
I feel like that was, like, the most real. Like, I feel like Mercedes she's not a real person. I feel like the character feels that she's always being pushed to the background of, like, Santana's the one getting solos even now. And, like, Rachel has always Quinn, Sam, Finn. Like, all these people are getting solos before her. And she's like, I don't know. I definitely could see her feeling that way without being shocked.
Yeah, actually, I think, once she let her guard down and spoke honestly to Rachel, I thought that was a really tender moment, and I thought that was actually very realistic. I mean, the rest of the stuff, like I said, Lauren manipulating her, it just didn't feel true to Mercedes, because Mercedes has never had a problem with confidence. I mean,
yeah, it's true.
Yes, we've seen her waver a little bit and, you know, show her vulnerable side. But for the majority of the time, she's very confident in who she is and what her talent is. So I didn't understand, like, this whole thing. And it's like they're getting picked on by everybody else. Like, they even said themselves, like, you know, the school hates us. You know, we still get slushied even though we won. And, you know.
Even Santana gets slushied.
Now, I know, right? Santana. Cheerio, Santana getting slushied. I was like,
Zoom. Yeah. So for them to turn against the rest of the club and now make them jump through hoops and, you know, like, making all these demands, I'm like, they're struggling for money. They're struggling to, you know, defend themselves from everybody else in the school and in the world, but yet now they're going to, you know, they're now going to turn on each other.
Yeah, the whole Mercedes demands thing and then her teaming up with Lauren, that felt very false to me. That felt like a much more childish side of Mercedes. And it just didn't... It seemed kind of silly. I don't know. The whole concept of it. And I kept forgetting it was there. Mm. For whatever reason, it was the subplot that when they would come back to it, I'm like, oh, we're still doing this. Yeah. And then, of course, Rachel running around and trying to, like... you know, abide to her and give her what she wants. I'm like, that's not Rachel at all. Rachel's like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not how I roll. That part felt very false to me. I think that's the part that really bothered me. And then by the time we got into the scene of in the car, I think for me, it was just the writing felt very stilted. Mm. And it just kind of on the nose, like, why am I not as big a star as you? I think was her line. Yeah. And I'm like, who would ever say that? I can't imagine anyone ever saying, why am I not as big a star as you? Especially in high school. It just felt very odd.
I don't know. I thought that was very, very real, very appropriate. And she even clarified it, you know, especially because people like me. They don't like Rachel.
Oh. Well, you know. No.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more genuine moments.
Hmm. Well, so we have, you know, that's definitely a big subplot we had in this episode was, of course, Mercedes and Lauren kind of teaming up and demanding respect, I guess. Lauren did have a great joke where Mike Chang had said, you know, I think that people should pay more attention, or we worked so hard, the Brainiacs, and nobody paid attention to us. And Lauren says, I'm trying so hard to remember what his name is.
But, oh, my God. That was hilarious.
I mean, if nothing else, this episode did give us a ton of good one-liners. There were a lot of good one-liners. There was the Brainiacs moment where we find out that Brittany is a cat disease genius.
Oh, just a human disease genius.
Oh, it was all cat diseases.
Well,
I think.
No,
was
they were going through other ones,
oh,
too.
Oh, was it just like anything disease-related was hers?
Yeah.
I mean, that was hilarious.
I watched it twice, and I thought it was just like cat diseases. And then, like, it was like bonus question after bonus question after bonus question, and she just kept getting them right.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious. Yeah. I thought that was funny. And then white rappers was a good joke. They had a lot of good jokes in this one, mm-hmm. but the plot just did not seem to stand up to scrutiny at all. And you're right, Ed, this was a polarizing episode, because if you look at our Twitter responses about this episode, it goes from I hated this one to I loved this one. I mean, Mark said musically possibly the best episode yet from Mark Motor on Twitter, as well as like other people. You know, Cyan Bird of Flying says love the episode. The end when Mike did the heart was so cute. You know, but then other people saying it didn't really. It was kind of lame.
Yeah.
So Marina 2 says best episode all season, but other people were opposite, saying it was really worst. Disappointing. Yeah, worst songs. So it was very odd.
Okay. I pulled up the episode and I found the 9 categories that they had listed and I froze it. Here were the 9 categories.
Oh, on the screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cat diseases, deadly cyclones, defunct sodas. Famous Mervs, Fat or Pregnant, History of Shoehorns, nice. Organic Chemistry, Potpourri, and White Rappers.
Nice.
Those were the 9.
That's awesome. I mean, what's his face? Apparently the only
Rod
celebrity
Remington.
Host.
Yes, apparently he's the only celebrity in
anything that
in
involves Rama. Rod Remington is A-okay in my
yeah.
book.
Absolutely.
Well, we also got some sunshine in this episode. I guess before we go to sunshine, let's take a quick listen to we just talked about Mercedes. Let's take a listen to Mercedes. God Lord, why was that so hard to come out? This is Ain't No Way, the Aretha Franklin classic, as performed by Amber Riley here on the Gleeful Podcast.
For me to love you, if you won't let me. It ain't no way for me to give you all you need if you won't let me give all of me. I know that a woman's duty is to help.
On the spectrum of Mercedes' performances, I'm about to say, like, this has got to be one of the best. And then as I'm going through them, I'm like, they're all really awesome. Like, she's an incredibly consistent performer on the show. I think part of it, too, is because we don't get a lot of songs from her. The ones we get can really stand out and be special.
Yeah. But I mean, this one was, I just think, incredible. I mean, it's very different from the other performances that she's given. And yeah. I listened to this twice today.
Ed, how did you feel about Mercedes Ain't No Way?
I'm not as enthusiastic as you two are. I'm sad to say, it was probably my least favorite performance of the night.
Really?
Honestly, I don't know. It didn't grab me. The other ones already, because like, I follow Rivers, I never heard of it. It was exciting. Turning Tables. I've been listening to Adele 21 for like a month now straight. And and I love Sunshine. So then you leave poor Mercedes out in dust.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm sorry.
That's valid. I thought it was really pretty, but you mentioned that we did get some Sunshine in this episode. We had Sunshine come back from Vocal Adrenaline and perform with the at least ask to perform.
Okay, you know what doesn't make sense to me? There was here's a general rule
yeah,
of thumb.
Right.
People out there. If there are more people on stage than there are in the audience,
thank
that's
you.
A problem.
Yes,
that's
seriously.
A problem.
The band never gets mentioned, but for some reason in this one it was really killing me because we had a choir, we had children's orchestra.
Choir Ain't No Way. And they're
yeah.
They're the neglected ones.
Yeah.
We had a full freaking orchestra for Turning Tables, and they were all kids, which was random. I don't know.
Yeah, and then there were like, what, six people in the audience that were just there to heckle them. And
yeah.
I think it was listener Kathy who made a good point that, you know, we're all the parents.
Yeah.
Like, none of these kids' parents would even bother to come to this.
Well, we actually got a comment on that one. This is also from listener Lisa.
Hi, this is listener Lisa from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm partway through the Night of Neglect episode, and I just can't help but wondering, where are all the friends and parents and family members of all the people in the band, or maybe the light crew, or any of that? Because when I was in high school theater and high school choir, you know, the band members' families also came to see them perform. I'm just wondering how there are only two actual friends there to see them. I'm sure other people are probably thinking the same thing, but I just thought I'd end. Thanks, guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what
yeah,
we were
friends
thinking.
Friends, too. I mean, well, granted, for some of the members of the Glee Club, they are their only friends. But it was really sweet of Kurt and Blaine to come.
Yeah.
He's really happy about
you
that.
You would think that after years of Cheerioing, Quinn, Santana, and Brittany would have some Cheerios friends.
Seriously.
No, I don't think so. Oh. They were evil bitches. I don't think they have
They
friends.
Were not. They were not.
Yes, they were.
They were.
And they were, and that's what made them great.
Yes.
They were best when they were bitches.
I agree. I think that there should have... I mean, it didn't make any sense. And it just felt very false to have, like, the place totally empty. Plus, you know, we keep talking about how the Glee Club does they do an assembly or a pep rally, and everyone loves them. And then 3 hours later, they hate them again. And there's no one that's willing to come to this stuff. I mean, for God's sakes, Rachel's gay dads apparently took her to everything when she was a child, and now they don't come to her pep rally. I mean, maybe this is silly because on the one hand, $5,000 is how much they have to raise to go to nationals, and I'm thinking like when
20,000,
I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. When I was a kid to go to New York, I would have thought at least a grand per person.
Yeah.
And now this is, you know, and when I was in high school, it was not
12 of
2011. Exactly. It's 5,000. It made no sense at all. And for $5,000, couldn't like Santana's dad kick in $5,000? I mean, one of their parents could probably just drop $5,000 to make this happen. Rachel's gay dads, for God's sakes.
Well, I'm thinking Bert seems to have money, but it's not for Kurt, so wrong team.
So I thought that was totally random that it was such an odd number. I don't know. There were a lot of inconsistencies like that in this episode that just felt weird.
I'm telling you, this whole entire episode was just birthed around oh, we need to give Mercedes and Tina an episode, and this is just how we're going to do it.
Okay. We hadn't seen a lot of a consistent storyline with Sue, but I thought this was a real episode, a real storyline for Sue this time, and I loved it.
Yeah, on
I mean,
that...
bringing together that group, Legion of Deem, Doom.
The League of Doom.
League.
Is it League or Legion?
I listened to it. It was League. I wrote it down because they had that great joke at the end where everybody's like, is this the League or the Legion? Well, before we get too far on, we did start to talk about Sunshine, and I know that Ed would love to talk about Charisse on the show. I had a question for you, Ed.
Yes.
Do you think that Sunshine was really a spy? Or do you think that she just had the best of intentions?
I think she had the best of intentions.
Mm.
And that it really was her coach who got her not to show up in the end?
I think that's also true.
Interesting.
See, the first time I watched it, I agree with you. And honestly, there's no definitive answer. But the first time I watched it, I agreed with you. I was like, oh, Sunshine's just trying to be sweet. And then Dustin pulls her out at the end of the show, which, by the way, we'll talk about Cheyenne in a bit, but I totally agree with listener Mark that Cheyenne is like made for Glee.
I love him.
Cheyenne is every reason to be on Glee.
I miss him on 30 Rock, but I love him in this.
Yeah, he's great.
I hope he gets more.
I agreed with you, Ed. And then the second time I watched it, I was kind of wondering, you know, maybe she is a spy. Maybe she is there because Rachel sent her to a crack house.
Not an active one, though.
Oh, wow.
not an active one.
But it was enough for her to leave the school.
However, at the end of the episode, Dustin does say, I pulled Sunshine out of the you could probably make the argument that
Sunshine's character is too sunshiny to she's not evil, she's just lonely at the top, so
and so short she feels like she's walking through a forest.
Yes, that was a great joke too.
I thought that was funny.
Jennifer, how did you feel about Sunshine? Did you think that she was doing that on purpose?
Honestly, there's so little of her to... Sorry, that came out
wrong.
We know so little of her.
This is her second episode.
I can't say.
Mm.
I really can't say. And I can't believe that, you know, she was just there for the, you know, not the mathletes. What do they call, though? The brainiacs.
They were the brainiacs, weren't
they? They're the brainiacs? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I can't believe that, you know, they got... Her team got beat by this team, and yet she's going to help them get further. So,
yeah,
I mean, it sounds good.
She's obviously not as committed to the Brainiacs as she is to Vocal Adrenaline.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
interesting.
Plus, I feel like in some ways, like this is going to be like Vocal Adrenaline's fourth year was last year. So it's going to be their fifth year winning nationals if they win. I don't even like. I know they don't think of... They shouldn't be thinking of William McKinley as a threat. I mean, it's their fifth time going to win it right now.
Yeah, and even Cheyenne said, they're not a threat. I just like messing with people.
as you said, it's the winningest.
Yes.
He's deliciously evil.
It was pretty interesting. It was kind of wacky in that way. We had... we did have Charisse perform... what was it? All By Myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of this song. I thought it was kind of like a bit of a parlor trick. I don't know.
It's been overdone so many times. Like,
yeah.
Freaking every girl in the choir room is singing this song whenever they wanted to have a big moment. I'm like, whatever, get over yourselves. Go get a real song.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but it was good. It was a good moment. I'm glad to see Charisse back.
Jennifer, how did you feel about All By Myself?
I thought it was a great performance. Again, I just kind of felt like the whole setup of, you know, hey, I'm here to help you because I'm just that good. I don't know where I fall on that, but I thought it was a fantastic performance. I think, you know, I guess I didn't do enough musical theater in high school for the song to bother me yet.
I mean, I just it's cheesy and not in a good way, and I find this song to be pretty tired, honestly. I can't tell you whether or not Pia Toscano performed it on Idol, but I can only assume she did. It's like one of those just like power singer standards. But my bigger problem with it was it felt so far out of place. Like, she just kind of showed up and, you know, she's like, I'm going to do a song now. And it really had nothing to do with the plot. And I know sometimes people complain that songs get shoehorned into the plot and that that can be a little frustrating. But I would rather a song be shoehorned into the plot so that it has a reason to be there than for a song to just be like, hang on, stop what you're doing. I'm going to do this song that has nothing to do with anything. And then we'll get back to the plot in 2.5 minutes. This song had nothing to do with anything except that they wanted to give Charisse a song
and
on the show.
All by myself, neglected, da-da-da. You know, like, thematically...
Oh, but it's pretty vague. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, All by Myself is more specifically about, like, you know, choosing not to fall for a guy, or, you know, it's a bit of a stretch. Ed, did you have that problem at all, or did it just kind of work because it was a song from Charisse?
I thought lots of the songs weren't, like, Adele isn't neglected. She's the first artist of 2011 to sell a million records from. So, I mean...
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I know originally the I Follow River songs was originally supposed to be a Bjork song, but Bjork wouldn't grant approval because she felt that she wasn't neglected enough or something to that effect. She's like, I don't know why you want me in this... From what I read from the quote, it was like, I don't know why you want me in this context, but you could have my song for another purpose, is what Bjork said. Honestly, most of the songs weren't neglected. I feel like the only one that really was I Follow Rivers legally, because I didn't even hear it until today. So everything else was not neglected.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, because that's a really good point. Let's go ahead and take a listen to All By Myself, the Charisse song. And here is a bit of that.
When I was young, I never needed anyone. Making love was just for fun. Those days are gone. Living alone,
just falling asleep.
I think of all the friends I've known. When I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
So, Ed, you were bringing up, before we went to Charisse there, you know, something that I really agree with. This was supposedly a song of neglected artists. And even if you excerpt this one and just look at the other songs that were actually performed during the Night of Neglect, we have an Adele song who was not neglected at all.
No.
We have an Aretha Franklin song, totally not neglected. I don't know if we should count the Bubbly Toes Jack Johnson song as being within the context of neglected, but... Jack Johnson is far from neglected.
Yeah.
And you could make the argument that Licky Lee is, you know, does fall into that neglected heading. I mean, with this new record, which is pretty amazing. Like, yeah, I suppose you could... That's the only one where I could say, hey, but then, you know, the blogs that if you read Oh No, They Didn't, they're obsessed with her and they talk about her constantly. So even that is a bit questionable. But I would give Licky Lee the neglected heading.
Well, she's neglected in terms of mainstream audience attention.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe she's not as recognizable or doesn't have the same following, but I don't think that means they're neglecting her. I mean, I think it's just an exposure thing.
He said neglect means people whose brilliance isn't truly recognized. So...
Yeah, okay. I think you got a point. Okay. I'll give you that one. It's absurd in any universe to call Adele a neglected artist.
I know.
She's that like, was just crazy.
Yeah. And I didn't think that... I didn't really care for Gwyneth Paltrow's version or her performance of it.
Well, we did get some Gwyneth Paltrow this episode. And they didn't give her a lot to do, but... I do like having Holly Holiday around, and it's kind of fun to see Will in a semi-functional relationship, at least for like a scene or two.
Okay.
You're looking at me like I'm crazy. How did you feel about Will and Holly in this episode, Jennifer?
Oh, I thought it was fine. I thought they were going to give them an actual chance, and it just, you know, like it's just starting and then it's ending. You know, it's clearly... You know, Holly already knew that Emma has feelings for Will. Then Holly witnesses the scene with Will and Emma and the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just, you know, she got scared, took the job, and left. So yeah. I just...
But I think this all goes back to the fact that Gwyneth Paltrow's character was only supposed to be one episode. And they're like, oh, we can extend it a couple more. Yeah. But we don't really want to commit to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, they don't want to commit to it. Why should I?
Yeah.
Why should I get emotionally invested in it? So.
Exactly. I mean, and I totally agree, Ed. But I kind of agree. I agree with Jennifer as well. They had to get rid of her.
So agreeable.
I know. Josh. It's so different for Josh.
Hugs.
I feel so good tonight. I agree with you, Ed. But I do agree with Jennifer too, because they had to get rid of her. Yes, they can't afford Gwyneth Paltrow, for God's sake. But they didn't. They could have done it better. They could have done it a little nicer. I do think the scene where Gwyneth was leaving and where she was kind of like looking at Will with the happy face and then looking away with the sad face. I mean, I thought that was beautifully acted and pretty well written. That was one of my favorite scenes in the episode. Also, possibly my favorite scene in the episode was also the Will Emma moment earlier.
Yeah.
Emma had some great stuff about like, I thought at this age I'd be fixed.
Yeah, I'd be better.
There was some beautiful stuff that that Emma did in that scene, that Jemma Mays did in that scene. And that was really lovely. Both of those moments, I thought, worked really well for them. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that they could have given Gwyneth maybe a... I don't know. It did feel a little just kind of...
Dismissive.
Boom, and I'm gone. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially when she knew about his attraction to Emma before even getting involved.
Yeah.
It could have been a little better.
Before having their little pizza date or their rendezvous in the janitor's closet, you know.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, that's what I'm saying about this episode. That was one of my least favorite parts of this episode and of episodes in a long, long time. It's just how dismissive everything was, you know. It's just like, it was too easy. I don't know.
Yeah. Ed, how did you feel about Holly in this episode and Will and Emma?
I love Holly Holiday, and I wish Glee could afford her and replace yeah. Will Schuster. I've said this since The Substitute, that she, like, she somehow manages to guest star and not steal the show, like, and in a positive way.
Yes.
I mean that in a positive way. Unlike April Rhodes, who guest stars and steals the show. Gwyneth has consistently guest starred, but hasn't stole the show. She's just been a pleasant distraction.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun.
Wemma, I'm glad that Carl's gone, because I don't know. I want them to be together, I guess, because they were supposed to be together. Like, if you just watch the first 13 episodes and you're done with it, you're like, they're supposed to be together, and everything since then has just been murky waters. But if it gets down to the core of the issue, they're supposed to be together, and they were cute together, and well, maybe all this happened so that Will knows how to deal with Emma more, Emma knows how to deal with Will more. Maybe this is how it was meant to be.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, that Will and Emma are two characters that are supposed to be together. I think they're an adorable couple within the context of them being pretend real people, and I'm looking forward to that. But it is, I in the past, like, We've never seen Will pursue Emma really, like really genuinely pursue Emma. We've seen Emma kind of pursue Will in her adorably passive aggressive manner. But really, all we've seen up to this point is Emma kind of being like, whenever you're ready, and then Will saying, okay, and then them trying to have a relationship for like two episodes and then splitting up. It would be nice to see Will make a damn effort, honestly. It would be nice to see Will, like, you know, put some romance on and actually like try to woo the girl for once and be a man about it. I think that would be a really beautiful thing to see Will do, and certain, you know, a certain degree of Will recapturing some of the good aspects of his personality, which it's been a while since we really saw Will be a nice guy, act like a grown up.
It's almost like he has to be tortured by Terry to make him look good.
Yes.
Like, that's when he looked best. When he was being manipulated by Terry.
He had a great line in this episode.
With, as I said before, Will without Terry is half as interesting and something else. It was hilarious. Someone should quote me.
Well, we did get Terry this episode. We got the League of Doom in this episode with Terry.
Honey Badger. I can't wait. That was the best part of that was the end when she was like, Honey Badger, we're calling you in our time of need. Like, oh my God, do it, Terry. Do it.
It was perfect.
We did get a voicemail from a listener who said she actually was kind of over Sue. I thought this was Sue at her finest.
I agree.
The scenes where she was talking to the League of Doom and they were kind of, you know, being snippy and kind of short with one another. We had Sergeant Handsome, the Pink Dagger, and the Honey Badger, and Sue, who chose to go by Captain Zod, or General Zod.
General Zod.
Yeah.
Like, well, that was great. Quintessential Sue.
What kind of meeting doesn't have bagels?
That is a good question. Terry was fantastic. I mean, she's like, I do need a hobby, and I do hate Glee Club. That was great stuff. And again, in an episode where the plot didn't really hang together and a lot of it felt a little false, the League of Doom was like such a great return to form.
Although somebody, look at my name, I think it was Alicia, who wrote that they should have gotten Carl in for the League of Doom because he would be, you know, number
Carl's
one hater.
Carl's too good of a person to do that.
I don't know.
Carl hates Will.
He hates Will. And at least would get to see Carl and it wouldn't be like this, oh yeah, you don't see my husband because, oh, we haven't been living together and, oh yeah, we're getting an annulment. Like, again, it was just too dismissive.
Ryan would have made just as much sense.
Oh, that would have been great. Ryan would have been hilarious.
Oh my God. Seriously. Have all of them on the same panel.
That'd be hilarious.
To have Carl and Brian Ryan.
Well, it would also be funny to have someone like, it'd be funny to have someone like Brian Ryan or even like April Rhodes on the panel who we don't know, like, we didn't know hated Will. Like, someone where you're kind of looking like, why are you there? He was really nice to you. And like, oh no, I hated him. Just, you know, I don't like the hair or something. It would have been great to have someone on there like Henri.
Shelby.
Just like, I have nothing against him, but I just, you know, need friends.
Josh Groban comes in.
Yes, exactly. Any excuse to have Josh Groban on Glee. I think we've established that.
It was so great to have Sandy back.
Oh, Sandy was so funny. And like, you've been poked. By the pink dagger. That was so good. Yeah, the League of Doom was just classic and great Sue. And I mean, there's not a lot to say about it, but it was hilarious. I have a question for you guys. Jennifer, how did you feel about Mike Chang's dance number?
I unfortunately had to do some stuff while I was watching the episodes. I didn't really watch it.
Okay.
I mean, the parts I saw, I mean, he's a phenomenal dancer. I just, it felt really wasted without somebody singing.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I just, you know.
It felt very out of place. For me, it felt like Glee was progressing and then they just went, you know what, we have such an amazing dancer on the show. Let's let him do a dance. And when we were at the Glee tour, we saw him do a dance where he danced with a mob like that. So I was like, oh, I've kind of even seen this particular dance.
But it's like, you know, like Sam. What about Sam? Like, why not have Sam do a solo?
He was the MC, apparently.
Ed,
how did you feel about Mike Chang's dance number in this episode?
Well, I think it was kind of goes with the point of, he said it himself that he's sick of his Sansa being overshadowed. It was just all this entire episode was like, here you go, here are all these people who we don't talk about a lot. Yeah. So you can't complain about it again. Back to Santana.
It's like actually a medley.
It was kind of the night of neglect.
Yeah.
Like now that you just said it, Ed. They essentially tried to make an episode for all the neglected characters and tried to do it in such a way where there would be no fallout that they'd have to deal with later. And say it was a night of neglected characters, much more than it was a night of neglected artists.
Oh, definitely. I thought that was a double tie-in. I always just assumed that's how it was going.
Well, I didn't get that at all. Nicely done, Edward. Let's go ahead and take a listen to Turning Tables. This is Gwyneth Paltrow's rendition of the Adele song. This is Turning Tables on Gleeful Podcast.
Close enough to start a war. All that I have is on the floor. God only knows what we're fighting for. All that I say, you always say more. So what?
Well, I asked on Twitter and on Facebook if the listeners wanted to give us a few of their favorite neglected artists, and I'll go ahead and put it out to you guys in just a second. But a couple that came off on Twitter, Ives Euphonium had the Fratellis and Jax Mannequin. Wow, Jax Mannequin. I haven't heard of Jax Mannequin. I haven't heard him since like Something Corporate. Let's see, we had Evil Cornflake with Chris Franklin, LOL. I don't get it. A lot of people said Rachel Berry, actually.
Rachel Berry.
Jumping on that one. We had Tap Dance Guy with John Denver. Abster Montana with Barry Manilow. Jennifer said, you posted that yourself, didn't you? I'm like, no. That was actually someone else.
Just saying.
Typo E had a long list of them. Micah. Bare Naked Ladies, Plain White Tees, Cure, Green Day. It does start to beg the question. GleekFan 96 even had Adele. The question that we kind of touched on earlier, you know, how do we define a neglected artist? And is it just a personal thing where you love them so much you're like, they should be more famous than they are?
That would be really hard for you, Josh, because you have, you know, like, how many, 160 gig of music?
I have about 450 gigs
of
music.
Okay.
I'm proud of it.
You're a media hoarder.
I am a media hoarder. You know, so to Jennifer, how would you define an artist that you love that you feel is neglected by a broad audience?
How would I define it, or who would I pick?
I don't know. Yeah, like, that's a better question. Who would you pick?
Yes.
As a...
I think the answer is yes.
Yes.
Well, a little vague there.
Exactly.
I like to be clear. Elliot Smith, to me.
Elliot Smith is neglected to you. Now, why would you say that?
Because I think he's an incredible writer, incredible musician, and just, I don't know if he's neglected or underrated in my eyes.
Interesting.
So I'm sort of struggling with the underrated thing, but Ed, how you said... that it was defined as... I forget how you said that. How did you say it was defined by Mr. Schuster?
Genius is underappreciated.
There you go.
Hmm.
That Elliot Smith. It's
interesting.
Mine.
Ed, do you have a favorite neglected artist?
Definitely.
I would think you have lots of them.
Well, you're like the biggest one for me is Vanessa Carlton. I know I brought her up before, but her second album was so amazing. And then for her to get dropped after poor sales after that second album just made me so angry, because that second album was awesome. Harmonium was awesome. And the fact that none of, like, oh, I think her biggest mistake was ever releasing Private Radio onto as a single. But with that, even with that, White Houses was strong enough on its own for her not to get dropped. So
interesting.
There you go. I mean, I'm sure I have like a bazillion people, but Turning Tables. I want to make this point about Turning Tables.
Oh, okay,
Every time I listen to Turning Tables, I always see I always see car crashes in my head because it's like the perfect background score to a, to any car crash. I
do like a slow motion car crash.
Yeah, like oh my god, it's so good. Like the Marissa when she dies in the OC. Spoiler. Old now, but not spoiler. So like every time I always think of her death, I'm like, oh my god, this would be so perfect. So someone needs to make a car crash video with Turning Tables in the background.
Interesting.
That's not morbid at all.
That's funny. We had a couple of listeners actually, both Ren Mike D and Crest of Waves, who both had Jamie Cullum, whom I haven't listened to since his first album, but you know. Good on you for that. Crest of Waves also had Fran Healy, who's the lead singer of Travis, which is a band I'm in love with. Which is also a question, too. Someone like Travis that is not at all a neglected band in the UK, is a monster band in the UK, but in the States has never been all that famous. I mean, there's lots of bands like that are... which now, of course, I can't think of any other names. But there was a band I was obsessed with in college that was like, couldn't walk down the street in Canada, but no one's heard of them here. So the whole concept of being neglected is a bit different.
It's all subjective.
Yeah, it seems very subjective from person to person. Over on Facebook, let's see, listener Molly had The Bird and the Bee. Joel Hooper had Debbie Boone. It's kind of fun. Peyton had Al City. Now Amanda,
Al City is not neglected.
Well,
like they're like a top electronic band like ever. I'm pretty sure Fireflies is in the top 30 selling digital songs of all time. Like that by definition makes you not neglected.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Lights is someone who I want to say who's neglected. Lights is like Al City.
Yes, definitely. Listener Lindsay had Fountains of Wayne, another person who's been sifting through my CDs. I would have to go through my own, who said, I'd have to agree with listener Renee and go with Harry Nilsson, who I'm kind of obsessed with at the moment. But for me, to say that he's neglected is like Harry Nilsson really inspired so many great songwriters that came after him, but he's someone we've not heard, you know, very few people know. Mm-hmm. And if you're in certain circles, you know, when you go back and listen to like the Beatles record talking about the White Album or the stuff they've recorded after they broke up, they were all saying we were listening to Harry Nilsson. He was the one that we were trying to be. So that to me is the mark of someone who's kind of neglected, I guess, historically, shall we say. I mean, and then there's people that, that are just you adore and are never got quite the mainstream success. You know, there's people that I adore, like Scott Walker or some of the, you know, I still think that the Cardigans is one of the greatest pop bands ever, and no one, you know, they all know Love Fool and Nothing After That. Does that make them neglected? Because they did have one monster hit and then no one listened to anything after it. I don't know, it's hard to call that neglected because they had a moment, you know. They definitely got noticed for a little while. But yes, if you'd like to weigh in on any, if you'd like to suggest any further neglected bands, you can of course find us on Twitter and send them over to Facebook. So the big Gleeverse news this year has been the Extra, who spoiled the prom king and queen, which was quite a big deal that came out, and some significant fallout is coming up. If you haven't heard the story, one of the extras from the prom scene that is coming up in an upcoming episode, I guess, wrote on her Twitter who the prom king and queen were. And we're not going to spoil that here. If you want to go find out, you can look it up. But look it up online. But yeah, it's kind of a big deal. I can't think of another show where this has happened, where an extra actually spoiled the finale of a big moment like that, I kind of think it's a little on the production for being like, you, that's why you shoot that, you know, three or four different ways, or you shoot the announcement with no one else in the room so that only those people know. Lost used to shoot the endings of every episode with like every character just so that no one would know which one was the real one. But it's kind of a big deal. And, you know, Ed, how do you, you're not a spoiler heavy, or you're not, you like spoilers. How did you feel when you read about this, this extra doing that?
I was interested. Now I'm more interested to see, because to my knowledge, they're reshooting the scene, they're rewriting the scene completely. So now I'm interested to see what will be, since we know what won't be. Or are they just telling us that they're reshooting it, and they're just going to go with it anyways?
That's a good point. We had a listener who actually sent us like a shooting schedule with some pretty specific dates, saying how they were having to move things around and bring back all the extras and reshoot stuff because they have to go to New York to do nationals. And so they have to kind of start hustling to be able to fit everything in. It can't be going on right now because every freaking member of the cast is at Coachella right now and tweeting the crap out of that. Jennifer, did you follow this story at all? The extra who ruined some stuff, and how did you feel about it?
It's funny. I didn't hear about it until after I had seen that Corey Monteith had tweeted something about having to do some crazy shooting schedules, and I didn't really know what that was about. So I got afterwards, you told me that somebody, you know, let it leak, and yeah, I'm like, obviously that person just doesn't want to work again, because I can't imagine that, you know, to cost this show that much time and money and, you know, to have them rewrite it, because I mean that could change a lot of things in subsequent episodes. I can't imagine that being viewed very fondly by Ryan Murphy or the other people in the production.
Well, yeah. Brad Falchuk responded to that person on Twitter, and he sounded pretty bitter.
Yeah, he was pretty ticked. He wrote, "Hope you're qualified to do something besides work and entertainment," and later wrote, "Who are you to spoil something talented people have spent months to create?" And you know, again, this person is crazy. But the thing is that, you know, I'm not saying she's crazy, but she's definitely a bitch. The problem though is that I would like to think that she will, you know, quote unquote, never work again, but she's only an extra, and there's thousands of extras that sign into Central Casting in LA, and I don't think anyone will ever remember this person again. I think that in 2 weeks, this person is going to show up at another casting call and no one's going to remember them. She might not be able to get another Glee gig. Maybe, you know, Glee is a closed system enough. But if Glee were to change casting agents next year, that person's not going to know who this girl is, and she could easily get on Glee again. I think she's going to have no problem continuing to work in LA, as wrong as that is. And in the end, they say she shut down her Twitter account because she, you know, for whatever reason, and apologized and then shut down her Twitter account. But at least for those weeks after it or days after it, she probably got a gazillion Twitter followers for doing that. So in a way, I mean, as horrible as it is, I think this person actually like won in the long run.
Well, I think I'm kind of glad that they're rewriting it, because the direction they were going in, I don't know if I was a fan of it.
Well, but that's total Monday morning quarterbacking. I mean, it could have been amazing when it happened. There's no way to know what the end result would have been.
I think it would have been super zappy, but okay.
Well, anyway, it's kind of wild. If you haven't, you know, if the listeners have an opinion, definitely let us know. It's pretty wild that this is even going down at all. That you know, they didn't catch it as it was happening.
And what's crazy to me is, like, I've been hearing about songs from extras for, like, ever, about, like, songs that people are going to be doing. People extra sneaking in with microphones and us getting low-resolution versions of the songs online. Like, I listened to, like, Halo, Walking on Sunshine 20,000 years before it actually aired on Glee. But it was, like, a terrible low-quality version that some extra snuck in with a microphone and recorded. And they're not getting in trouble for that. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like just because we know what happened, we don't know how it happened. So to me, that, like, it's a spoiler, but it's it's an incomplete picture.
Yeah.
At the very best.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a personal preference. I mean, there's definitely people that immediately saw that the information was online and started following that person so they could get the information. It's definitely a different, there's different ways people watch the show. But yeah, that's about all I've got for Night in a Oh, Jennifer, you've got something else.
Oh, well, we didn't talk about the confrontation with Karofsky.
I know.
Oh,
I know,
wow,
right?
I totally forgot.
Totally the foreshadowing for the next episode, so you can't really skip that.
I'm sorry, yeah. You're totally right. Fizz, confrontation with Karofsky. How wild was that?
That was pretty wild. I'm shocked that Kurt and Blaine had that much restraint and not, you know, basically outing him. I mean, I could see the person's shadow behind them, so I'm like, oh, somebody's just going to overhear them actually say it, but not really do it. But then when... Santana's so funny.
Yeah, she did great.
You get two options.
I have razor blades in my hair, all up in my hair.
Yeah, no, that was. I thought that was really great. Yeah. I'm really surprised that they got so close to you know telling the truth about what happened. And then backing away. So when it does come out,
yeah,
it's going to be pretty crazy.
And yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of rumors on the internet of how it's going to go. Ed, how did you feel about the confrontation with Karofsky?
I thought it was exciting. I love Santana.
She's awesome.
She's awesome.
It just shows how awesome a person Blaine is. That's all it does. So and it was good because this way we have some more context for the next episode, which is 90 minutes long. So there you go.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this could just be arguing that it's setting up the next 90-minute episode, which is cool. I mean, we're going to have that. We also had Heckling Club in this episode,
yeah.
Which was pretty hilarious to have.
It was interesting okay, so the Heckling Club, that was pretty funny. And then Holly Holiday confronts them, and she's like, you know, what you're doing isn't cool. There are consequences. It desensitizes you to people's feelings. And it was because it was like so brief, but full of information. It felt so PSA.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they kind of said something about that. Cause I mean, it's just one of the things that I hate that people do that, you know, the online bullying or thinking they can just, you know, be obnoxious in the name of being truthful on the internet. You know,
yeah.
It's like, Don't pick battles with people over Twitter or Facebook or email. It's just, I don't know. I think it's just kind of despicable. So
I agree. And plus that needed to be an episode. Like they needed to spend an episode talking about online bullying and on, you know, the culture of insults. I agree. It just kind of felt shoehorned into the middle of this.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we've got some time. Let's go ahead and have a quick PSA on being a douchebag on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of, it felt kind of weird.
And the Heckling Club was kind of funny, especially, like, you know, the group that they pulled together.
And you notice that the football player in that scene who said, I'm just going to go home and do a post on how cute Mark Harmon is.
Yes.
So
on NCIS. Yeah.
That was pretty hilarious. But anyway, so now I'll ask Jennifer, anything else on Night of Neglect?
I don't think so.
Ed, anything else on that?
What am I missing?
I don't know.
I guess I'm happy. I mean,
all right.
I'm excited for next week. And
yes.
This week really wasn't that terrible. I don't know.
No,
people seem to hate on it.
I think
much.
The thing is I agree with you. Now that we've had this conversation, it really wasn't that terrible. It just could have. It didn't. It just wasn't all that great. Again, if we'd had narrative momentum and this was one episode in a run of like five, it wouldn't have bothered us. It wouldn't have bothered me at all. You know, they have an off week. They want to take some time off and just talk about neglected characters. Heck yeah. But after a big break like that, and then to come back to this that was kind of meh. That
see, I feel like my biggest, the biggest difference I have versus all of you is because I just in the past week, in preparation for this episode, I rewatched the past five episodes. So to me, there's
you
narrative
had
momentum.
Yeah, you did. You created your own momentum.
Ed, where do you find the time to do that? I have one
I don't
job
know. Between 4 and 7 a.m.
Oh,
usually.
Do you sleep?
Ed's a rock
Seriously,
star.
Do you sleep?
No. Not tonight. Not at all. Not tonight.
Aww. Well, good luck with it.
Well, yes, we shall let Ed go to his all-nighter. But before we do, Ed, would you like to thank any iTunes reviewers?
Yes. Onyx21, Daryl Ujita, Michael Bulach, James Pope, Vicky Lewis, Kim L., Eric Schulte, Gleek at Heart, Five Worth a Lifetime. Thank you very much for reviewing us. I probably doubled up on some of those from last time, but whatever. You want two shout outs anyway, so whatever.
That's
all. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, you can do so at Gleeful Podcast. And then the three of us have separate Twitters you can find on our website. I want to send a shout out to Erica XOXO Lynn, who said her favorite neglected singer was Hilary Duff. She said, weird choice. It's kind of weird. And then we got a couple emails giving me crap because people who don't have Twitter, apparently they send emails, and emails are really hard to read on the show because emails are long and I'm just reading it. Like, a voicemail is really easy to play and it's like interactive, but an email is just more of Josh talking, and I think we get enough of that already. So I apologize, I don't read as many emails. I do read them personally, but we don't read as many of them on the show. But we did want to mention listener Aaron and listener Annabelle, who gave me crap. So there you go. I mentioned you on the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you'd like to email or weigh in on anything we said tonight, you can email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Gleeful Podcast. I'm at High Tech Elvis. She's at Jenny B. Creative. He's at Edward D.
Whatever. It's okay. I still somehow managed. I thought you were passing me in followers, but then I realized I still had more.
No, but horrible. I am gonna pass you in followers in the next couple days because I got an email from ABC Television saying they're gonna use one of my tweets in a commercial, and then I'm gonna skyrocket to stardom, to Twitter stardom. It isn't even a very nice tweet. We'll talk about it after. You can find us. Our website is at gleefulpodcast.com, where you can buy the T-shirt. Buy the T-shirt, people. The T-shirt's awesome. Please,
it's so
pre-order
cute.
The T-shirt. And and you can find us on Facebook as well. If you just search for Gleeful, for the Gleeful Podcast with Josh and I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
Shining down all over the world, except for when the cyclone strikes. Deadly cyclones are 500. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.